From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made over this past weekend when a rather surprise announcement came, at least for some of us, from the New York State Senate. Republicans announced that they are open to the so-called Raise the Age legislation that interest groups, Democrats, have pushed for years. Raising the age, by the way, refers to the age of criminal liability in New York State. New York and North Carolina are the last two states left in the country that try 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. Democrats have pushed for this legislation as a requirement before they would agree to a full budget, and Republicans say they are ready to talk. Senator Jeff Klein says he believes it'll get done. Well, this hour, a discussion about raising the age and what it means for all of us. What does it mean for 16 and 17-year-olds in particular? Each year, more than 30,000 16 and 17-year-olds in this state face adult charges. As I get ready to welcome my guests, just a couple of notes that they've asked me to tell you about. The Little Theater, which WXXI, of course, is a partner with, is closed today, weather-wise. And this is one of those days where you didn't know who you're going to see based on the weather and if you're going to be able to have scheduled conversations. But it turns out our guests are here, and I just want to thank them for being here. So it starts with Minister Jerry Ingram, who himself was arrested when he was 17 years old. He's a youth minister at First Unitarian Church. Minister Jerry, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Michael Tome has been an activist for Raise the Age, and also he's with Facing Race, Embracing Equity. Michael, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, too.
And John Greenbaum is here. He's an organizer for Rochester Acts. And John, remind our listeners what Rochester Acts is.
So we're a faith-based interdenominational group, both urban and suburban, multiracial. We've got 23 congregations in Monroe County that are members, and lots of folks who have been helping out on this campaign in other congregations.
Listeners, if you've got questions about Raise the Age, what it means, sort of how this process is working out right now, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Minister Jerry has a very interesting personal story that we're going to explore in just a moment, but I want to start by asking John Greenbaum whether you think now we're on the verge of seeing this as kind of a dead debate issue, that, you know, that Republicans have said they'll at least talk about it, that they're open to it, that Jeff Klein, part of the breakaway Democrats in the state Senate, say it's got to be there or we're not going to do a budget. I mean, are we on the verge of seeing this done here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we were in Albany talking to senators and their aides, and, you know, one of the aides talked to us and said that, you know, this is a deliberative body and it takes years to deliberate. And with the grassroots pressure moving this forward, keeping it on the agenda, this is the year it's going to happen. No, I think at this point, no senator in the New York State Legislature wants to be the last senator in the United States to keep putting teenagers in adult prisons. That's not a tenable situation to be in anymore.
When I look at the list here, you know, we have a number of Republican state senators from our area, and you and many others have attempted to get in touch, to lobby, to talk to them. So if I go down the list and just look at people like Joe Robach, Rich Funke, you know, Ranzenhofer, who have you had a chance to kind of talk to and feel like maybe you've broken through with?
Yeah, well, Minister Jerry and I talked to Senator Ranzenhofer's aide, Jay, and we had a great conversation. Actually, yeah. He was a former police officer, and yeah, he was talking about how his police department in Genesee has had already moved forward with parental notification. So one of the things this bill does is it makes sure that when a youth is arrested and interrogated and brought in, that the parents are there. We heard one story from some folks in the city about a fight that happened in one of our high schools. And one of the officers in the high school came and arrested one of the youth who were standing next to the fight. That was a 16-year-old youth. Kid was taken into detention. The mom came to pick up that young youth and nobody could tell her where her child was because there's no parental notification as of right now. So that's one thing that changes. And this Senator Ranzenhofer's aide was pointing out that, you know, that's actually a best practice that police departments all over the state are already doing, and it's just a matter of codifying it. And so he said that, you know, obviously the senator has some concerns about funding mechanisms, that this is something that they've got to talk about to figure out the details. Same with Senator Robach. We met with Senator Robach. He said, you know, what is a violent offender? He wants to look at the list. Again, fine. You know, the fact that we've gotten to this point where they're negotiating the details, that's incredible. And the same with Senator Funke. He's concerned about funding mechanisms, making sure there's enough money to expand the family court and to build the facilities we'll have to build. Excellent. You know, those are the you've won when they're talking about the negotiating fine points.
And I'm looking at a piece from WRAL in North Carolina, looking at a very similar debate in North Carolina. New York State, North Carolina, the last two states that have not raised the age of criminal liability, and North Carolina could be on the verge. Their conversations, just reading from their article, the proposal would cost hundreds of millions of dollars up front in the short term to build additional juvenile facilities in North Carolina and make other changes in the justice system, but advocates believe it's the right thing to do and, over time, could save the state millions of dollars in reduced recidivism and improved economic productivity. And Michael Tome, those are just a couple of the themes that you had mentioned before the program. You think that this Let's just look at the dollars. You think over in the long run this is a saver?
Yes, I do. One of the benefits of being the 48th state to do what, the 49th state to do what 48 other states have done, is that you can examine the best practices from among all those who have already instituted Raise the Age. And I think the commission that put together the whole package of reforms, and this is not just changing one law. This is actually reorganizing the whole juvenile justice apparatus. So the practices that were chosen are supported with data saying that they reduces crime, and that, of course, reduces expense in the long run. So I believe, yes, that economically one can make the case, as well as just morally.
And when you look, Michael, as somebody who, as you describe yourself, you're a data guy, when you look at the kinds of crimes that lead to incarceration, that you lead to 16 and 17-year-olds being tried as adults, let me just read again from North Carolina, and you can share with me from what you understand about New York State if this lines up. Because I think sometimes people hear Raise the Age and they think, oh, wait, you're going to take violent offenders and you're going to, you know, not treat them as adults. Let me just read this, okay, and you can respond here. This is from, again, WRAL in North Carolina. The vast majority of convictions for 16 and 17-year-olds are for minor infractions. In 2014, the last year for which statistics are available, only 3.3% of convictions of 16 and 17-year-olds in North Carolina were for violent felonies, end quote.
Well, I think that we should be clear that there is no get-out-of-jail-free card anywhere in this legislation intended for violent offenders of any sort. And in fact, as part of that recidivism, I think you see the acceleration from children who committed misdemeanors to being introduced through being housed in adult facilities and for some adult prisons, introduced to a criminal culture where when they do get out, and they will get out, they come back to the communities and are often more violent as a result of being adopted, so to speak, by that
being
culture.
Adopted, and what do you mean by that?
What I mean is that as we hear the stories, I mean, if you're a young person and you go into these adult jails, you have to make basically family connections with people who are going to guide you as best as they can, but they're generally older adult criminals. We've heard it described as the light going out in the eyes of some of the young people who have been in the system.
Yeah, Michael and I have been interviewing people in the community who are involved in the system, who have been subjected to the system. And we interviewed someone who was 16, 17 in Rikers Island. And she pointed out that, you know, she was adopted by career criminals as part of a family. And she said it's complicated. You know, they took her under their wing as a sign of love. You know, it was a way to, it was a way to create a family and to take care of her. And what she learned from them was how to do crime better.
Yeah, and if you go back to, there's one statistic that kind of speaks to the impact what it has on young people, and that if you house a youth in adult facilities, they are 22 times more likely to commit suicide than if you put them in age-appropriate juvenile facilities for the same length of time.
Well, we saw that with Kalief Browder. So the story of Kalief Browder is just harrowing. You know, here's someone who's arrested for stealing a backpack, which apparently he did not steal, and because of the court system, spent years in Rikers and in jail. So in prison, in jail, and then carried that trauma with him afterwards and killed himself. I would just add that. It's because of those stories that, yes, it might cost more, you know, and I think it's the moral thing to do, regardless of the cost. But that being said, the IDC, the Independent Democratic Caucus, did an economic analysis last year, and they did point out that there'd be $117 million savings every year from instituting this. So it pays for itself. There's $110 million on the table to implement this reform. So aside from the fact that it's the right thing to do, it also makes sense.
Okay. Well, let's ask Minister Jerry Ingram to tell a little of his story. You were 17 years old, and Minister Jerry, just take us through that. What happened?
First of all, I would like to add what John was saying, and Mike as well. And whether it's not, whether we feel as though it's the moral thing to do, if we say we are a people of rehabilitation and we would like to see people who go into the system come out better than what they were, so they don't come out and reoffend or do the same things that previously got them in those situations, then rehabilitation needs to be adjusted, rethought. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. We've had conversations on this program in the past. Listeners may remember the conversations about conditions in prisons, the way that people are treated, the assumptions that certain staff have about people who are serving sentences, and the lack of hope they feel about mm-hmm. reintegrating to society in productive ways. We are making a values choice, I think, mm-hmm. with that kind of a structure. And I think Minister Jerry is helping illustrate that point.
Yeah. Definitely. And my story, it's simple. During my younger years, growing up in the inner city in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, which is in Broward County, South Florida, and then parts of Miami, which is in Dade County, you are your environment. And at the time, being a teenage, what they call an African-American man, although I identify myself as just a Black American male, but that's another story. But growing up in that environment, excuse me, we decided, hey, you know, the school thing is not working. Quick way to make a buck. We're poor, you know, family, you know, the situation at home is totally different from, our white peers that we're going to school with out in the suburban schools and in suburban areas and stuff. And we felt that, you know, selling drugs was a way out, a way to provide for your family. You know, it was a quick buck, and hey, you were not, you know, putting a gun in somebody's head. So we decided, hey, we'll sell drugs. And you know, I found that at a very young age that I wasn't good at it, but we tried it, and we ended up getting caught. And I was 17. He was 16, and
your cousin,
my cousin, yeah, he was actually 16. I was 17, and we go to court and we go through, you know, the procedure, how they, you know, take you through and all the rundown and things. And so he ended up actually getting weighed over as an adult. And so now the conditions of his arrest become even more difficult now.
Did he have a different judge? Because I'm trying to understand exactly, did you do different things? Was there any violence involved? What happened?
We had the same charge. We were selling drugs outside of our apartment where we lived. It just happened to be a school down the road, which is considered another violation if you are in a perimeter of a school. District or area, I think it's like 1,000 yards away you have to be or something, feet or something. But anyway, we had the same judge, same, you know, criteria as far as the arrest. And just somehow, like we say, some are fortunate, others are less fortunate. I just happened to be one of those ones that was fortunate to get my case sent down to family court.
And he was tried as an adult.
And he was tried as an adult.
And you still don't know why?
Don't know why.
Wow. Okay.
Don't know why.
And then what happens to the two of you?
Well, I mean, it set us on different paths. So instead of taking the 6 years, he took a plea. And they gave him 3 years. Me, and just did a little time in the county. Not county, the juvenile system, whatever. And I got out, started slowly changing my life around.
Did that shake you up? I mean, do you remember what you were thinking as a 17-year-old watching your cousin in the adult system and you had a different situation? Were you thinking about that at the time?
At the time, I was, because we were always aware of the possibility of being housed with adults, adult men. And, you know, the thing about that is, you know, you either become prey or you become a predator, and it causes you in your mind frame and your mindset to be different. And so now you look at people with a different mindset, and it can be in a way to where there's bitterness there. There's, you feel inferior to that person. So in order to make yourself feel like a certain way, or feel like you're getting back at society for the pain they've caused you. And so when you house teenagers with hardened criminals who's, you know, 30 years to life, who's, you know, never going to see the light of day. And this 17 or 16-year-old, he only has 5 years, but he's still with this hardened criminal. It shapes his mindset. You know what I mean? And so when he got out, it's like he was in and out. You know what I mean? Our lives went in total different directions. You know, I went on and, got my education and married and became a minister and, you know, done a lot of wonderful things that I've been fortunate, you know, to be able to do. Why his life has been in reverse, you know, and I've talked with him throughout the years, and it was clear to me that when he was in there with the, when he was in prison for those 3 years, being around that type of environment caused him to look at life and people in a total different aspect. You know what I mean? Like, it just fundamentally, it was not clicking anymore. The reality of being a conscious being, as far as having compassion or considerate of others. You know what I mean? Like, that was out the window now. And it was, you know, just hard. Like, his heart had become hardened. And so when you, this is what we get when you put these young men or women with these type of men and women who, you know, don't care about life anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like you're stealing the hope away from them. And really, let's be honest, do you want this type of person? Because we know, even if you send us a 16 or 17-year-old to 10 years, 20 years, guess what? That person is going to get out.
Yeah.
Now, when we allow this person back into society, what kind of person do we want this to be? You know what I mean? So we really have to think about this, because remember, these are the same people that are selling drugs to your grandkids, or robbing and breaking into your houses and stuff. You know what I mean? And they're not 16 or 17 no more. So now the offense becomes even more severe, because now that 16 or 17-year-old who was caught selling drugs or committed something that was not so horrendous, but got him enough time to send him to adult prison. Well, guess what? Now he's 30 years old, and he breaks into your house or home, or selling drugs to your grandkids or daughters or whatever, and then now he commits a murder. You see what I mean? So we want to take that away, that aspect of that mentality when it comes to these youth being locked up. You know what I mean? Because look at it. What does an eighth grader have to do with a 12th grader?
Do you have any doubt that your cousin would be in a different place in his life if he had gotten the same deal that you did?
Oh, yeah. He would be totally different. The kid wasn't, he wasn't a bad kid. I mean, he wasn't a street kid, you know? It was like you take a wimpy kid and you send him to the army, and he come back. He's battle tested now, and he's like, whoa, wow. You know what I mean?
That's how you looked at it.
Yeah, it was like a transformation. You know what I mean? So,
do you have hope for him?
I do. I believe there's always hope. I believe that there's different levels, different age periods that we go through. And the hope is that you will realize one day, or she would realize one day, that, hey, I've been going about this the wrong way, and there's a different way or a better way to do it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, there's hope.
Well, we have a couple of phone calls, I think, that are going to illustrate some of what this conversation is all about. So if you're on the phones, please hang there, and I'm going to start with Lucille in Rochester. Go ahead, Lucille.
Yes, thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Evan. This is a very good subject. In fact, I'm going through this problem right now that we're discussing with my, well, he's now 18, my grandson, and he's being charged as an adult. When he committed the crime, had just turned 17. 3 months after turning 17, he committed the crime. One of my questions, and I'll be brief. I know you've got another caller.
No, take your time.
Are they going to? He's facing 3.5 years in prison. Are they going to go by when the crime was committed? Possibly with this new legislation. What his age at the time of the crime, or the age he's at now? That's one question I have. And my other comment is involving, he is kind of like that kid you just mentioned. He's not a street kid. He made a mistake. You know, he got hanging around with the wrong fellows there for a little while, and he did, you know, commit a crime. There's a lot of questions I have, but anyway. My major question is that we do have a kid here who is not the type that would survive in an adult prison. I can't even sleep over this matter. And right now, all he's doing is staying home, but he cannot stop smoking marijuana. He is addicted. And there's this addiction here that he has, and it's going to send him away because of that addiction. So that's another issue. He's not on this, you know, committing any crimes. He's changed his life completely, except for this addiction to the marijuana. And he's going to go to serve 3.5 years because of that, if he isn't totally zeroed screening by April 19th this year. April 19th. So this is the situation I'm in. There's so much that I need to talk about. I'm hoping I could tell me where to call to talk more about this,
well,
with this agency, but the church is in that. That you've mentioned, I'd like to know more about your organization.
All right, so Lucy, you'll stay there.
Thank you.
Stay on the line, please, because I guess I'll start with John Greenbaum, or about the best way to answer some of her questions or comments to John. Go ahead.
Yeah, Lucille, my heart is heavy hearing your story. I don't know if I can answer your question quite definitively for a number of reasons. One is my understanding of the bill that's in question. Number one is that you can be tried in adult court based on your age, but if the bill passes, you would be you would be housed or sentenced to a youth facility until you're not a youth anymore. And I've heard some negotiable squishiness in that, so that if you are convicted in adult court, but then sentenced to the juvenile system, when would you age out? And I've heard 20 or 21 as a possibility. But the other thing that makes my heart heavy is that, you know, we're talking about rolling this out over a number of years. And so I don't know if first starting with 16-year-olds and then 17-year-olds. So I don't know if this will roll out in time for your grandson.
Yeah, there's a three-year period, even if it's passed, a year kind of to get ready to organize a lot of things like family court and the other services. Then it's rolled out to the 17-year-olds, and it kind of proves that it can work before, in the final year of the phased rollout, comes to bear. Excuse me, on 16-year-olds, and then 17-year-olds. The last year, I reversed those two.
Okay. So unfortunately, it doesn't sound like it would apply here in this case.
There are some things in terms of working with offenders especially at the reentry end, including expunging records. If of offenses up until 21. Once you have been proven to stay clean and got on a better path in life, I think we all know adolescence, there's kind of a fork in the road for all of us there. And if you throw on some of the conditions facing some of our youth, this is a vulnerable time. If you ever need a mentor, it's probably during that age of 16, 17, 18, when you can really make a life choice that you don't even understand is happening. And this program tries to provide the services for those willing to reach for those, you know. And so I also have a lot of compassion here. I mean, what we don't want to do is provide these other type of mentors, the prison system, using that as the next step, and the only people who will listen to these youth who are at a troubled moment.
So any other questions you have before we let you go, Lucille?
Well, one more question. I'll be quick. During the time that I think it should be put in the legislation that an adult be present when they interrogate these kids.
Yes, that is a big point. That is something I think that goes into effect a lot sooner. Yeah. In terms of this whole plan came from a commission that the governor put together and included Rochester's Elaine Spall, several district attorneys, sheriff, and criminal justice specialists from across the state. And there's at least several provisions in there for making sure that interrogation takes place with an adult alongside these young people, regardless of the crime. This is something that applies to everybody.
Good. Very good. Thank you so much for
Lucille,
taking my call.
Yeah, thank you, Lucille. Good luck to you. Let me turn to Donald in Rochester. Next up, go ahead, Donald.
Thank you. I'm calling today because I was the mentor for an inner-city youth from February 2007 right up to the present time. And this young man lived in a very tough part of the city off of North Clinton, and I would see him every weekend for 8 years. And when Jerusalem, that's his name, when he just turned 16, he was accused of stealing a bicycle on his street. The police kept after him. Although there was no bicycle found, it was an accusation from another child. He was placed in Monroe County Jail, and I remember I have his exact words when I went in to see him. He said to me, "Mr. Bart, I thought you are innocent until proven guilty, but I find myself guilty until proven innocent." So he was released on probation, and the grand jury met on December 21st, 2010, and the case took 20 minutes, and it was dismissed from court. Now, that was a big change in his life. He, from that point on, and this is from experience every single weekend with this young man, and we were close. He began to have serious problems in school. His grades dropped below C average. Additional tutoring didn't help. He was placed in Hill Haven Hillside for violating his probation by not getting home at 6 p.m. He never graduated from high school. When he was 18, he was sleeping during the night down the street from his grandma's house because he couldn't stay with his grandmother anymore. And he was just about homeless. Every time I tried to find him, I had difficulty. In 2014, he was with a boy who stole a smartphone and had a pistol, and there was physical abuse. Jerusalem was arrested by something they told me is guilt by association. In other words, he was there. He spent over a month in jail at Monroe County. I visited him every week. He had an incident at a Monroe County jail where he got into a fight, and he received punishment for that. All of this time went by, no court appearance. The boy who did the crime admitted that he was guilty, and he also stated in a letter and to the judge that Jerusalem was not involved. He was just there. On May 12th, Jerusalem was placed in the correctional facility, Green Correctional Facility, located in Coxsackie, at Coxsackie, New York. That placement means that almost no one close to him would have an opportunity for a visit. I have talked to Jerusalem occasionally, and he is extremely remorseful. But he also feels that it was not right. He has approximately 3 more years to serve. The judge sentenced him to 2 4-year terms.
Donald, let me jump in here because I don't want to interrupt the story, but I think you've given us a lot to think about with this, and I would just ask you to Michael Tome, you know, anything you want to share about this story?
Well, I think we already know what to do with a young man like Jerusalem. I think we're doing that for 14 and 15-year-olds. And again, it's the idea of pretrial diversion, giving them access more toward a counselor, making them kind of walk the path of what's called restorative justice. Understand what the wrong is. Understand what there are victims involved. Maybe even meet and talk to the victims and make them feel sorry at a younger age. But it is we often refer to it as Department of Corrections, not the Department of Infinite Punishment. Mm-hmm. Right? And if there's any age in which we expect to employ techniques that can correct behavior, this is the age. That's why we're going to raise it.
And let me just ask Minister Jerry, you know, you hear Donald's story about Jerusalem, who was, again, put in jail at 16 for stealing a bike, and Donald is convinced that that had an impact on him, even for a short amount of time, even before the charge was thrown out there. He's convinced that that experience, essentially as a child among adults, hit him.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to tell Mr. Bart, you know, you're a good man, and you continue to have compassion for this young man. That's an unbelievable story. but yeah, it just goes to prove the point that, and what I was saying earlier, in being one of those people who had to go through this, it impacts you. You know what I mean? I mean, we're teenagers. They're teenagers. You know? What does the guidelines say? That teenagers still need adult what? Supervision. So what is the supervision going to be? Someone of a sound mind that makes good judgment calls, or someone who has the total opposite? You know? And the real question is this. When this young man does finally get out, what type of person do you want to let back into society? You know? And if we haven't given this young man the proper tools to be successful when he gets out, and put him around the right people, for God's sake, come on. We're human beings, right? Yeah. I mean,
so we wouldn't let Jerusalem at 16, wouldn't let him vote, wouldn't let him go into the military, wouldn't let him operate a tractor trailer. But right. We're going to hold him accountable like he's an adult.
Yeah.
Right. And again, 3 years from now, we're hoping what would happen with someone like Jerusalem is that there is going to be a mandate for offenses of that time that he be given these diversion services, these opportunities. And they have been proven to improve the outcome for both the youth and we also got to say for the communities. I mean, one of the aspects of Raise the Age is that it's estimated that we're going to probably remove 2,500 crimes that will never happen now if we put this into effect over the next few years. There's a cost, there's certainly an emotional cost on the communities for those crimes will be an impact against. So by providing the right diversion, by basically the counseling to try to prevent people like Jerusalem from ever getting into jail or having to be sentenced, we're going to change that person's life and also change the life of potential victims.
I'm way late for our only break. I just want to thank Donald for that phone call. Chris in Rochester and Paul in Rochester waiting on the phone. We're going to get your comments and questions when we come back. Just to remind our listeners, we're talking about the Raise the Age campaign. We're talking about the age of criminal liability. New York State and North Carolina are the last two states in the country where the age of adult criminal responsibility remains in play for 16 and 17-year-olds. And raising the age would make it 18. It would put New York State in line with 48 other states. North Carolina has a similar bill where they may get that done this year as well. And Senate Republicans are on board with considering this and maybe passing it before the budget even gets done here. And so we could be on the verge of seeing it happen, essentially kind of erasing whether this is even a debate anymore, but it's not done yet. And so we continue our discussion with John Greenbaum, who's an organizer for Rochester Acts, Minister Jerry Ingram, who himself was arrested when he was 17 and told his story. He's a youth minister at First Unitarian Church, and Michael Tome, an activist for Raise the Age. He's also with Facing Race, Embracing Equity. Back to your phone calls next. Coming up in our second hour, all of your questions answered about how to get better sleep. And yes, millions of us need it. Millions of us think that maybe we can get by on 5 hours a night. Maybe that we just can learn to live with that. Bodies don't really work that way. And we're going to talk about the impacts and also techniques to change it, as well as the latest research on sleep. Join us next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've had a number of phone calls, people wanting to share their concerns or stories, and I want to squeeze in more of those if we could. Paul in Rochester, next up. Go ahead, Paul.
Hi there. Yes, I'd like to relate a story that's got a little brighter side to it. It's sad to hear the stories of these children who have been so negatively affected. About 16 years ago, my son, who was just months from turning 16, was caught going into the school cafeteria with a little bag of pot. It was for his best friend. And we were taken before a local judge, and she read him the Riot Act. And she said, you know, if you were 4 months older, I could charge you as a felon. You would lose any scholarships. You would not be eligible for scholarships. It would go on your permanent record. I forget what else she said. You couldn't serve in the military. All these different things that would affect him if he had just been a couple of months older for such a minor infraction. He wasn't selling or anything. He was in a white upper-class school system, court system, and by being treated this way, he was able to, he got the message. He got the message. He had to write a letter to the court describing the impact on him. He did go on to college. He did have scholarships. His mother and I might not have been able to send him to where he wanted to go if he hadn't had the scholarships. He graduated. He's created a successful tutoring and test prep business. He's now at Harvard doing graduate work in education. But if she had really, if he'd been just a couple months older and she had gone the route that seems to be for so many kids, I can't imagine where he'd be today. And I can't imagine the cost of trying to just house these kids that screwed up when they were young and didn't get the chance, particularly children, minority children, children from the inner city, people who go before a court system that just simply have no heart, no understanding of what these kids are going through at that age.
Paul, thank you for sharing the story, and thanks for sharing a story of maybe a different outcome and what can be different. And I think it's important now to turn to Michael Tome, because you've got a section of, well, why don't you kind of tell us what you're going to read from here, but here you have Paul relating his concern that not only is this an issue that impacted his family, he's concerned that it's an issue that disproportionately impacts people of color, kids of color. And Michael, take it from there. There was something I know that you wanted
to
read.
Well, I mean, I am part of this group called Facing Race, Embracing Equity, mainly as a result of reading Michelle Alexander's The New Jim Crow, which gives a devastating and detailed account of how the culture of mass incarceration, which impacts people of color far out of proportion to either the number of crimes they commit or and since the 1980s. And so the only way I could feel that I could not stay on the sidelines anymore was to get involved. And when I first started researching Raise the Age and the work of this commission, I've found in the introduction to the commission's report absolute verification and acknowledgement of the problems with mass incarceration. In the introduction, it says, the impacts of processing of all 16 and 17-year-olds in the criminal justice system fall disproportionately on young men of color. Young men of color are substantially overrepresented among youth who are arrested at age 16 and 17 and who end up incarcerated as a result of the offense. Those impacts are felt not only by the young men themselves, but also by the communities of color around the state. And right there in the plan for Raise the Age is you know, that statement on the lack of equity and the way crimes are being prosecuted here in New York State.
And here's a contrast, if I could. You heard Donald, who called in earlier, sharing Jerusalem's story, a story that began at age 16 with him being accused of stealing a bike, ends up in an adult system, ends up, in Donald's view, his life has changed because of it. Wendy writes us an email that says, here's the contrast in the suburbs. My brother, this is what Wendy writes, my brother stole a bicycle at age 15 or 16. The police caught him with the bike, and here was his sentence. No jail, had to return the bike and do some yard work for the offended family.
And we've seen this with heroin use, right? So 15, 20 years ago, heroin, if you were addicted to heroin, you received the full brunt of our carceral state, right? So you were told that that you lacked moral fortitude, right? You didn't have the proper grit in our society. Society wagged its finger at you if you were addicted to heroin. And then young white people in the suburbs started to get addicted to heroin. And our society started to look differently at this issue. And they started, people in this, in decision-making power started to change the rules around how we treat people with heroin. And we have had a sea change. Well, the fact of the matter is that, you know, 70% of the kids who are arrested, 80% of the kids who are incarcerated, 16 to 17-year-olds, are youth of color. And, you know, one has to wonder whether that would have been the case, that we would have had this insane system for decades if those kids were white.
Minister Jerry, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's sad to hear these stories, and then the discrepancies that we see here as it pertains to being privileged and those who are, you know, less fortunate. But I just really believe that change has to come, you know, in order for our society, our democratic society to become better, you know.
Let me get back to your phone calls, and this is Chris in Rochester. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi. So I kind of jumped into this conversation a little bit late, and the only thing I'm hearing is, you know, if you were convicted at 16, and, you know, sent to prison or whatever, getting that changed. The two things I want to mention is that when I was 16 and I'm now 30, I was sentenced in the town of Greece for a burglary, went up to county court and was sentenced to there to 5 years, 5 years post-supervision in 2003. And I subsequently ended up turning that 5 years and post-supervision into 8 because I kept violating. And neither here nor there, I was in the wrong, not only for the crime or whatnot, but I wanted to comment quickly on the fact that the Department of Corrections, as far as a juvenile facility, and there's only 2 as far as mediums go, you have Green and you have Washington, and then for the maximum security, you have Kentucky. The whole system, to me, as somebody who's experienced it, is kind of a joke because I went through the whole process of doing the reentry program in Orleans, getting out, working with Catholic Family Centers for Restart, all this stuff, and really the only thing I garnered out of that whole experience is the fact that they had these great programs that they wanted to get everybody signed up for so that they could look better. And meanwhile, there was no concrete change happening for individuals either going in or out, especially when a recidivism rate is, you know, 6 months after, you know, a release. But I wanted to know, for individuals that were sentenced in 2000 and up till now, would this law, this bill that's being passed, would that be applicable to someone like me who has gone through the process, is no longer on, as you say, papers, has kind of completed that, but can't get anywhere as far as that being expunged from their sentence or from their record for life?
So that's a question of retroactive sealing of...
Yeah, it depends, I believe, on when the crime... You say you're 30 now?
Yeah, he's 30, yep.
Yeah, I don't know to what degree myself. I can't speak off the top of my head to what degree it would be sealed. I can speak a little bit, though, on the fact that the reentry services may have changed since you experienced with them. Monroe County, in fact, has what's considered a model program that has been proven since, and it's a comprehensive one, too. It's again, in the recommendations that it be replicated across the state. And in the first 19 months of the initiative, it's a task force approach, and it's reduced recidivism rates to 20% compared to a norm of 63%. Again, a data-driven proof that a lot of what's in this program has already been proven to work.
All right, before we lose the hour here, John Greenbaum from Rochester Axe, is there a new video that we're going to see that you guys are... Am I jumping the gun here? Wait.
We're working on it.
Okay.
we have hours that we're going through
now. So real briefly, you're working on a video that kind of demonstrates the impacts of some of this issue, yes?
Yeah. Me and Michael have been interviewing folks, and Michael's a noted filmmaker locally in town, a videographer. So, and you've got something playing next weekend?
No, it's actually at the end of the month. It's part of the Fast Forward Film Festival.
Oh, Fast Forward Film Festival. Yeah. Okay, so
that's here's another.
Maybe we'll talk to you on Fast Forward Day, which is later this week here, right?
I don't.
Tomorrow. That's tomorrow.
So, I don't think so, but
but listen, John Greenbaum, Rochester Axe online. You want people to check out where?
Yeah, just Google Rochester Axe, and you'll find us.
Okay, and maybe eventually a video. I'm sorry, My notes are too detailed, so no, we'll be patient with that. And lastly, I just want our listeners to understand the situation here. You've got the Assembly that passed the version of this bill. Governor Cuomo has said he supports it. Right now it is up to the Senate. Could you see compromises or ways to kind of change some of the language? I guess it's possible. Some of the members of the Independent Democrats and Republicans have said they're worried about looking soft on crime. That's what you've heard in a lot of other states that have eventually passed it, 48 out of 50. Have raised the age. North Carolina and New York, we'll see if that happens this year, but you're up to speed at least on where things stand now. And I want to thank John Greenbaum from Rochester X. Thank you.
Thank you.
Minister Jerry, continued good work to you, and thank you for sharing your story.
Really thank you, sir.
And Michael Tome, thank you, sir. I look forward to your work in Fast Forward as well and in many other places. A short break and more connections is coming up.